You know, because at first you're kind of thinking, oh my God, what on earth are we going to do? But then as soon as you kind of opened up your mind to looking at how you could make this work and how you could make it actually very viable, like amazing work comes out of these conversations. It was strangely moving because you suddenly realized that everyone was going through exactly the same thing.
You might have recognized the voice you just heard. It's Professor Abigail Zilibes. She's a professor at the prestigious NYU film program, same program where the professor Spike Lee is teaching, and same program that have seen generations of legendary filmmakers come from. Martin Scorsese, Ang Lee, Kari Fukunaga, and many, many more. But most important, you know her from interpreting the character Dr. Thayer in Crypto Z. And I wanted to bring her here, first of all, to continue on our journey to discover the skill and the craft behind the making of Crypto Z, but also because as the pandemic rages again, we artists, creators, actors, filmmakers, podcasters have to keep creating. And if that means the only tool we can use right now is Zoom, then what can we learn from it? And what can we get out of that platform for actors and directors alike? And so I thought I would bring in the most optimistic person I've ever met in my life. So without further ado, is Abigail.
So as I mentioned, you know, using the Zoom platform has become vital to teaching remotely now because we can't be in the same room. So a lot of that has involved not only the students thinking outside the box and actors thinking outside the box and directors thinking outside the box, but also educators, is what could we find which still enabled everyone to connect in a way that served, served the a director and an actor working together, or an actor really becoming aware now of how to use the audio space and how to use the visual space, because now it's almost in effect like they're in a box, that they're in a close-up. So a lot of that has been thinking about how can we teach somebody in this process, and a lot of that has been using, believe it or not, using improvisation or creating scenes and creating monologues which serve the Zoom platform. So that has in turn has created other, you know, scenes particularly that have worked well, I find, have been scenes which are set in a different reality or if they're in a different space. And really finding places that where that can work most effectively. I mean, of course, you've also got the monologues, you know, creating monologues which actually, oh, there's a beautiful butterfly right outside my window. Is that lucky? And then you know, how does the director direct that? And how does the actor respond to that? Because they are now essentially in a close-up.
Right, because the only screen and the only camera they can use is their computer's webcam and the Zoom video. So basically what you're saying is that instead of trying to keep your class going, which is impossible because it's such so much about workshopping, actors and directors together in the room and having directors act, you're just throwing everything away and starting from scratch and inventing a completely new way to teach.
Well, in the first semester of the first year, it's actually acting craft, which really focuses on the director being in the actor's shoes. So really helping them to understand what it feels like to be an actor and what they have to process in order to get to certain places. And I think the more you understand as a director, the more you understand what an actor's process is, the easier it is to communicate with an actor and help them. Because really, most of the time, I always say, if an actor knows what they're doing, the best thing a director can do is get out of the way. But that's so mean. But a lot of times, you know, the actor will need guidance because they can't see themselves. And really, if you're being true to your craft, you're in the moment and you're not looking at yourself. You're actually right there. And sometimes you need adjustments, and a director can be very helpful in guiding you that way. That is indeed when we bring in actors into the class to work with the director. So the directors really get a sense of what is hands on.
Mm-hmm, right.
So now how that's changed is because you're not literally in the same room. So you're using a whole different set of skills. How can you change that? What you're doing, what you need from the other person? How can you support the actor to do that? And what's helpful for the actor, I think, is to find all those adjustments of what they need to do in order to serve the material with this platform, with this amazing box that we're all now forced to be inside.
I know, and we're like desperately trying to connect and feel and experience things through it. So, but because your workshop is just so geared towards experiencing and transforming the participants in the moment, in the class, in the workshop, now you have to, for it to work, you're going to have to understand what can be done, what the platform, what kind of experiences can we share through the platform. Like,
but it's interesting. I think it's really interesting. You know, I know we had talked about various different movies which really serve that, like Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a prime example, because they're all in such a different reality. And Black Mirror is another one, because it's kind of this weird other fantasy world. So all of those different materials are really helping, I think, forge where we next go. I mean, what I really want to look at, what I've been looking at is okay, so certain games that we play or exercises we do, how can we do that as a group? You know, can we find a way to do that as a group? So like the Exquisite Corpse, I don't think I ever did that one with you, but it's one I love to use, you know, which is how you are passing pieces of paper around. Well, how can you pass a piece of paper around? Unless we, like, Zoom becomes such an incredible platform that you can actually start to pass pieces of paper through the screen.
Right. I remember passing electricity around.
That's right. Definitely. Yeah, the pulse. My God, that was one of the first exercises. You have a great memory.
Yeah, well, I remember that, you know, your class was especially good for me because, you know, we kind of had to be vulnerable and really uncomfortable. And I don't appear like it anymore, but I'm a very shy and introvert person. So people who are shy and introvert, there's one thing they don't like is to not be in control of the emotion that they let go or that transpires. So unfortunately, that kind of leads to sort of becoming this person that you're not and not really be your full self. So yeah, that was a kind of a life-changing experience for me. And so I'm curious, like, how are you able to create the opportunities for those participants that are, like, so, you know, that are not connected and in their own homes, to kind of, you know, reach deep inside, you know, in order to create that experience that you absolutely need for the transformation to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's happening now is either using those specific scenes that I mentioned or which is even more helpful, I think, is especially in the program at NYU, is because it's all about being a writer and a director. And one of the things that we had done was actually conversations in the age of COVID where I literally gave the directors a set of questions to ask the actor. And from the answers that they got, which was on Zoom, which was private on Zoom, and from the answers that they got from the actor, they created a monologue specifically for that person. And they could, I really gave them, you know, like freedom to do whatever they want, whether they wanted to, you know, do a dance, or they could, it didn't have to be a talking head necessarily. Although it ended up mostly staying that way, but it could go anywhere. And I know that there's been other instances where we've used improvisation. So that was something that was really helpful and interesting, you know, because at first you're kind of thinking, oh my God, what on earth are we going to do? But then as soon as you kind of opened up your mind to looking at how you could make this work and how you could make it actually very viable, like, amazing work comes out of these improvs and out of these conversations. It was strangely moving because you suddenly realize that everyone was going through exactly the same thing. Everybody was like going through this anxiety, and then they were going through this, like, what are we going to do? And then it's like, and then kind of coping with it, and then drinking a lot, you know, a lot of were drinking a lot, especially, you know, so you had all these different, this human condition, which was really beautiful of emotions going on.
Can you share some of the questions you have them ask the actors?
Oh, so they were actually, I did about 15, and I actually said to them, you can ask them in order. You don't have to ask them in order at all. And you can use as many or little as you want. So I kind of started off heavy, which was like, what's the love of your life? Do you have a secret ambition? What have you noticed most about yourself during this situation, during this COVID? Is there anything that you miss?
And those were directed at actors, right?
Yeah. And some of them kind of went a little dark, I think. But the reason being was because I think, or rather, more not so much dark as personal. Because I think, and you didn't have, obviously, it's completely the actor's prerogative whether they answer them or not, that what they reveal or what they don't reveal. But I think what's interesting is what the then director takes away from the material that they've been given, because they might write something completely that just spurs their imagination, and which then in turn really gives something back to the actor, which is very, very personal. And then it's the combination of those two things. Because also I think what the directors and the actors found was how much the similarity of what they both were going through in their own way. So it became this bonding thing, which was very moving and very heartfelt.
Yeah, I mean, I could see how it allows the actors to kind of immediately draw on deep emotions and kind of like sculpt that. And by the same token, the directors who then are writing the monologues to add to it their own story and their own emotions to it. Is that how you would approach working with actors and allowing this kind of connection between them and the personal self and their characters to serve the story and bring that emotion to the story? Because I could see that being a little bit intimidating to create that kind of relationship over Zoom, and considering that every actor is different as well.
No, I think that's absolutely true. I think I always say to you guys, and I'm sure I said this to you at one time, and I'm sure you're discovering that for yourself, and have been, especially since doing Crypto Z more than ever, you know, because how much you have to, especially what you did, which was like, you know, touching people in all different corners of the world. And in a way, you have to be a little bit psychic, I think. And because you can't speak the same way to everybody. Everybody's different. Right. You know, as we always say, you know, actors aren't, you know, machines with a button. You just press it and go, you know, do that emotion. It was great. You have to find how can you help that actor go to that place or find that place and feel safe as well, and feel very safe in where they are being asked to go. Because essentially you're revealing everything about yourself, and that leaves you extremely vulnerable, as we know. And even more so now, I think people feel incredibly vulnerable because everything's being stripped away that's normal. I think you have to be very like a mum or a dad almost. It's almost like you're very nurturing and you're caring. And above all, you need the actor to know that you have their back. Whatever happens, you have their back, you know? So, I mean, that's my method. I mean, some directors may be very cruel and use all sorts of heinous methods to get what they want. is that what you're like, Hadrian?
Yes, that's exactly who I am. Heinous methods are my specialty. And you should know, because you were in Crypto Z as well. So
you were very good.
Right. Well, you trained me, so you can't really say it otherwise. But having said that, not to be the devil's advocate or anything, but you know, we've seen monstrous and heinous directors get results on the screen as well, to the credit of the actors, actually.
But. Well, no, it definitely exists, but I think, you know, if an actor is trained, but that, you know, you can get also some amazing raw talent coming out of very untrained actors, as we, you know, you've seen before with directors have just, all they've cast is like non-actors, and you've seen some incredible results. But whether those people stay doing that is a whole other issue, of course, and it's specific to that film. But I think most actors, they want to go to where the source is. So, but it may be sometimes difficult to go to where the source is, because it's a bit like a Pandora's box, isn't it? Once you open up that drawer, you you let that emotion out. You let it out, and you can put the and you can put it back in the drawer and close it. But that drawer's been open now, so you always have access to it, which is a gift. But it's also, you know that they lived it. They lived it to some extent.
Yeah, I know, they're amazing. So let's talk a little bit about the voice, because I think if there is one thing that the Zoom platform can still allow is to work with your voice. And I knew it was an essential tool before, but, you know, having gone through making Crypto Z and hosting this podcast, I realized how powerful the voice is and how much personality and character and emotion and identity comes through the voice. And having gone through the experience also of hosting the podcast and hearing my own voice, which is a terrifying experience. and so I was wondering if we could, how one would go about working on that tool specifically to kind of shape, to kind of take control of it, either to build their own persona, a public face, or to work on a character, like in an audio drama, for example.
Well, I think, it's I think once you start to inhabit a character, you start to think like the character or the person that you're playing. And I think that immediately would take you into a territory which is foreign to yourself, which is not, it's like you almost like you step outside your skin to be in the skin, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So, and I think as far as technique is concerned, with audio, you have to use your voice in very different ways. So a pause will mean something, an intake of breath will mean something, not talking too fast, obviously, because you can't, I think, the minute somebody starts, and I talk very fast naturally anyway, maybe too fast. So to slow that down so that the weight of the words or the weight of the story is allowed to land. And that's all part and parcel of what you go through, I think, when you are playing a particular type of character. Of course, then you have all the different strings of accent or class or creed or whatever this personality comes from, and what they want. So what their need is. So all of that has to be transformed through the voice. All that has to be translated. And that's always something that is very interesting, I think. And you must have noticed a lot of that when you were, because you were working with so many different actors, so and all very going through different emotions as well, and finding, making sure that sounds right is quite a trick, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was, very fortunate to have, great writing. And I quickly realized, there's two kind of actors, the ones that have figured out how to not only live it, but know how it would affect their voice. And they're actually, I think, able to just listen to themselves and listen to their voice and just translate everything through it. And the ones that haven't, that may be able to do all the acting work required, finding the source and et cetera, as we talked about, but are not able to transform and bring that experience into their voice. And therefore, sometimes it breaks and they feel like they're reading the words and not inhabiting the words. And they may not very well live it with their face and their body on camera, having a hard time making that transition to the microphone. And that was just fascinating to me because it is complete magic. I still don't understand what exactly happens that when I hear my actors just speaking normally and suddenly transforming into the characters, even though they don't necessarily transform their voice or add an accent and just, they were snapping into character right away and be there. And that was such a privilege to witness. It felt as like somebody performing like magic tricks just for me. I hope that people can hear it in Crypto Z. And since then I've been obsessed with the idea that first of all, I want those actors to be recognized for, the kind of ability and magic that they have. Because I feel like maybe they're underappreciated. How do we, and then, you know, how do we help others be able to get there? Because they're missing out on so much fun. Because, you know, my dream is that people get inspired by CryptoZ and start, you know, going after us and do the same thing even better and make better work than we can. I can't tell you how much fun it is. Like, I could do it all day. And if we find the support and the community and the listeners to keep making those and making sure that everybody is taken care of, this could become a new, you know, I strongly believe this could become a major entertainment form and be part of people's life and in a very significant and meaningful ways. We're completely sidetracking here, and I totally forgot the question I wanted to ask you. I think I had a very selfish question. Do you have any tips for me so I can change my voice and sound like the person I thought I sounded like?
I think
it's... clearly, I don't.
Don't ever change, Hadrian. I think a lot of it's about...
I want my voice to sound like Morgan Freeman.
Well, then, yeah, you should definitely lower your register there then. Also, he's quite a bit older than you. So, you know, you might have to wait a bit. He has that very rich, dulcet tone, doesn't he? My God.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I mentioned Morgan Freeman is because I know that he had to transform his own voice to sound like this. He wasn't born with that one. And I know you have done the same work for yourself and you had a much higher pitch voice and brought it down.
Well, I mean, part of my training, and I think this goes for, you know, most actors, is when you start going into training, you tend to speak fast because you don't think you're interesting enough to hold an audience. And you tend to speak too high. Your register is too high. So you're talking from the top of your head rather than from your stomach. And a lot of the training that goes into refining the voice is actually how you speak from the whole cavity, which is your rib cage and your back. So that immediately grounds the voice. And also from your stomach, of course, your diaphragm. That immediately grounds the voice. And because it also lowers the register as well, because you're very aware of lowering the register of your voice. And you never stop learning that either, because especially when you're coming into a new part or you're studying a new part, you're nervous, you know, so your instinct is immediately to rush. And the whole point is, and obviously as you get more experience, you understand, no, I know how to help this. I know how to fix this. But I think that's part of really giving the whatever character you're playing is some kind of gravitas, and so, and the audience listens better, because, you know, if you start something at the top of your range, it's very hard to listen to someone screaming at the top of their range. But you can hear it really effectively if it's lower in register, and then it builds, so that they get to get whatever climax they get to. So it's still rich and it's still anguished and it's still painful, but it actually translates to a very raw emotion. And that's what triggers the audience. I think that's what triggers people to, through the voice, is to feel emotion and to feel what that character is going through. So
does it when you're transforming and grounding yourself into that character and in his voice, does it also affect the way you listen and you listen to the other actor?
I think that's probably the most important thing that you can do as an actor is to listen. Because if you just look as if you're waiting to say your next line, it immediately translates. I mean, with audio, of course, you have to listen because you can't see that other person's face. And that's, you know, so you're really very specifically listening to the words of what somebody is saying to you. And you hear it better in a weird kind of way. I wonder if we should just make people close their eyes when they talk to each other on the screen, you know, so that they actually learn. Because that's actually, it's more difficult than it sounds, which is to be a good listener. And you see that, Morgan Freeman is a great listener. You see everything pass through his face when he's listening. Alan Rickman was talking about that when he was alive, obviously not now because he's dead, but he was saying that was one of the the most important gifts for an actor is to be able to listen.
Right. Oh, I remember the question I wanted to ask you. Can we track back to the difference between acting and reading and how the transformation happened and what makes some actors or host or speaker, even, public speaker, feel like they're reading and reciting and those who feel like they're actually living it?
Yeah, well, actually, it is interesting what you say, isn't it? Because that's what we were doing. We obviously didn't learn the script when we were recording this because there was no need.
Right, no, nobody learned their line. Everybody was reading. Everybody came in, got their line, and for some reason, some people just feel like they're reading and some people don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes from connecting with who you're playing to such an extent that suddenly those words become yours. So it's as if you're saying it and you're not reading it anymore. It's just you're feeling it and you're feeling everything that's going on in that situation. So, you know, it's all about imagination, isn't it? We all have imagination, but how far can you burst that bubble? So I think, you know, with respect to how can you practice that, I think a good way to do is, like, there's all kinds of texts you can take and practice and listen to yourself, and there's a lot of different techniques I think that you have to do with your voice so it doesn't sound flat, and the last thing you want is your voice to sound like it's on one kind of, you know, flat line.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing more boring than that or deadly than that. So it's a lot of different things I think you can do at home right now. Being quite critical of how you sound. Can you make your voice lighter or even like inflect up as opposed to down? Because that, again, especially with comedy as well, you want to inflect up and not down. And also driving through to the sentence right to the end, you know, so that you don't lose breath before the end of the sentence. So it's how do you keep the force, as it were. Now, you probably found that a lot because there were some long descriptive passages at times where you really needed to be focused, right?
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think, you know, it's all about imagination and holding on to it.
Yeah, and I think, again, you know, it is, you know, you can imagine because when you're actually running up a mountain, you know, you on camera, you would be running up that mountain, but you're not, you're in a sound booth. And so you've got to put all of that physical energy into your voice. And it probably would be too much if you put all that physical energy into your voice on camera. It would look weird or sound weird, but it sounds great because the voice is doing it's creating all the imaginary visual for the audience. So it is very specific and really it's its own skill. It's its own technique and its own skill, which is great to do.
Well, thank you so much, Abigail. I think, you know, we have a lot more we want to discuss, but I think maybe this is a good place to stop for today. And thank you so much for taking the time to do this, because I know you're super busy right now.
Oh, it's really, really, it's been my pleasure, Adrian. It's been really fantastic to talk to you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed that episode, please let us know by texting us at 646-229-3423. If you know someone that might be interested in learning about the craft of audio drama, please share this episode with them. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcatcher.